EIR. And I'll read this subject into the record. Summary of public comments / issues and discussion on approach to finalize draft environmental impact report, final groundwater cleanup strategy for historical chromium discharges from Pacific Gas Electric Company's Hinkley Compressor Station, San Bernardino County. And Dita?
Okay. There we go. This item is coming before us here. Ann Holden will present the staff report, and then we'll follow that with comments from the public. If you have not already filled out an orange card, there are some on the side. If you could please fill one out so that I take your cards in order, and I will manage the comments at the close of the presentation. Thank you.
Good evening, Chairman and members of the board. My name is Ann Holden. I'm an engineering geologist in the Waterborne South Lake Tahoe office, and I'm here to discuss item 9, which is a summary of comments and recommended path forward for the draft environmental impact report for comprehensive cleanup of chromium and groundwater related to PG&E's Hinkley Compressor Station. The draft EIR was prepared by Waterborne staff and our consultant, ICF International, for Hinkley groundwater cleanup. The EIR is needed to support future Waterborne discretionary actions that may affect the environment, and these are an upcoming new general permit for large-scale cleanup activities and a comprehensive cleanup and abatement order, which will be issued to PG&E to direct that cleanup. The draft EIR was circulated for a 75-day review and comment period from August 21st through November 5th of 2012. And we received some limited comments from agencies, numerous comments from individuals, mostly Hinkley residents, also PG&E and the Hinkley Community Advisory Committee. We also received questionnaires and surveys from community members. And in my next slides, I'm going to step through the comments received from these groups and just focus on some of the key comments. We received comments from the California Department of Fish and Game, mostly having to do with biological survey requirements for plants and wildlife pertaining to timing and survey protocols needed to support their future permitting actions for the project. The Mojave Air Quality Management District wrote a letter concurring with the air quality mitigation measures that we had in the EIR, and the Native American Heritage Commission recommending consulting with tribes and avoiding and keeping confidential cultural resources. We had comments from individuals. A comment of concern had to do with byproducts from in situ remediation, which you've already heard some tonight. These byproducts are metals, manganese, arsenic, and iron, which are mobilized in the in situ remediation zones as a result of injecting ethanol. We've been working with the community on this issue, and many people want to see more information and data in the EIR regarding byproduct plume definition, defining baseline levels of the byproducts, discussing the fate and transport of the byproducts, how long are they mobilized in groundwater before they precipitate out, toxicity of manganese in particular, and also a more robust discussion of evaluating the impacts of in-situ remediation. We also received some comments requesting that we shut down the in-situ process and requesting that we expand monitoring near the in-situ zones, and Lori Kemper discussed recent actions on requiring additional monitoring in those areas. Some of the CEQA issues that were identified, the draft EIR having to do with identifying a single environmentally superior alternative. The draft EIR currently lays out a discussion comparing each of the alternatives to the other and noting that each alternative can be considered environmentally superior to the other depending on what environmental resource that you're looking at. We're going to retain that discussion in the final EIR, but we will also propose to identify a single environmentally superior alternative. We've had comments requesting that there's more information on the path forward to the waste discharge requirements and cleanup and abatement order after EIR certification, also giving people ideas on when those upcoming public input opportunities will be, and I'll address that in an upcoming slide. We had comments requesting that the EIR should be flexible enough to incorporate any new data, in particular, any new background values that could be derived from a new background study, to incorporate new technology and apply adaptive management. And we had comments that the project area in the draft EIR needed to be expanded to account for chromium detections in the northern area of the Hinkley Valley near the Hinkley Gap. So we're going ahead and doing that, expanding the project boundaries and the project study area to include those northern detections plus a one-mile buffer. Many of the comments that we received are going to require us to go back and just add additional information, correct or clarify typos or things of that nature. Some comments were going back and gathering some additional data to provide more robust analysis. One of these has to do with the impact that we identified related to aquifer compaction and drawdown for the alternatives. And we're investigating doing some additional modeling to help support and investigate whether that impact is truly significant and unavoidable. And we're going to, there's some additional data that we've identified in a model that may help us inform that impact conclusion. So we're working on that. Another issue has to do with the stability of the trivalent chromium in the aquifer and soils after the hexavalent chromium has been converted to trivalent chromium. We're going to gather some additional Hinkley-specific aquifer data to provide a more robust discussion of the ranges of stability of that chromium conversion and include that in the EIR. A couple of other things that will just be tweaked include adding some language to the mitigation measure number 7 for water resources that has to do with restoring the Hinkley Valley aquifer's total dissolved solid and nitrate concentrations back to pre-project levels, and consider adding some language to that mitigation measure that would allow a proposal to come forward where we would consider that on more of a basin-wide approach rather than looking at each individual agricultural unit or well, taking a slightly bigger step back and considering looking at that on a basin-wide approach. So we're developing some language to try to add that flexibility into that mitigation measure. And also adding some language about statistical significance to thresholds for hexavalent chromium. And currently ICF's remediation experts are doing a viability screening of an additional above-ground treatment method. That's the electrocoagulation method that you've heard about at previous board meetings. They're taking a closer look at that, and we'll have some more information in the EIR to discuss that. So Water Board staff had developed a questionnaire that we distributed at our various public meetings for the EIR and had on our website, and the intent was to try to get some focused community opinions on impact acceptance, opinions on alternatives. We didn't get a very good response. We only got 5 questionnaires back, so I can't make any big conclusions from that sample pool. There was a slight preference toward a balance between speed of cleanup and impacts, but very limited information. And then a Hinkley resident developed also a community survey with a similar focus, trying to gauge public opinion on the pace of remediation versus impacts. And also had a question polling the community on their opinions of leaving the trivalent chromium in the soils. About 88 survey forms were submitted to the Water Board. And those survey forms showed that about evenly split, 29 to 30, as far as about 30 people wanted a longer cleanup time to avoid impacts, and about 29 had no preference on the pace. but a majority of people did have the opinion that chrome 3 should be removed from soil. So we are developing responses to these comments. The final EIR will include detailed written responses to all the CEQA comments and show the changes and additions that were made to the EIR in response to those comments. There'll be an opportunity for the public to review that final EIR starting in April of 2013. And now I'm just going to step through a path forward of finalizing the EIR and then moving on to the WDRs and cleanup and abatement order, and then outline on the right side where the public opportunities for review and input to the board will be associated with that. So here we are today, discussing the comment summary, and the public will have an opportunity to address you tonight. We plan to circulate the final EIR for 30 days through April and May, including response to comments. We're proposing not to identify a preferred alternative in the final EIR, and I'll discuss that further in another slide, but there will be an environmentally superior alternative as I discussed. We would then bring that EIR to the Water Board for your consideration at the May 8th board meeting here in Barstow. And we could also have a discussion at that board meeting on the timing and requirements of the general permit and the cleanup and abatement order and how we might circulate those. Staff would then go back and develop a draft cleanup order and a draft general permit. I have these both kind of in one box but separated because they could be circulated together or separately, and we can make that decision. That would be sometime in the summer of 2013, and again, another public review and comment period associated with that, with the proposed orders coming to the board together or separately sometime in fall of 2013. So we are not proposing to have a preferred alternative in the EIR. This will be responsive to the comments with where people wanted a flexible EIR so that we can adaptively manage the project and roll in new information as needed. The EIR looks at all alternatives in full detail. So this is consistent with CEQA. A preferred alternative isn't required by CEQA, provided that all alternatives have been analyzed at an equal level of detail, as we did here. And this also ensures that we are in compliance with Water Code Section 13360. Water Code 13 Section 360 prohibits the Water Board from specifying the method and manner of compliance. And by specifying a preferred alternative, we could run afoul of that requirement. So Water Board certification, when it comes to you in May, you would be certifying that you've reviewed and considered the final EIR and that it has been completed in compliance with CEQA, that it reflects the Water Board's independent judgment and analysis and analyzes a reasonable range of alternatives, discloses impacts, and identifies feasible mitigation measures. And with that, I'll take any questions.
First, board member questions.
I'm not sure, but I think you may have misquoted the community survey results for leaving Chrome 3 in the ground, where the overwhelming preference was to remove it.
Yes.
You said that it was about equal. It's not at all equal, according to the paper I have. Now, there are some differences between papers that we have and the slides you've been showing.
Are you looking at page 9-13 of your agenda?
I am, yes.
To remove the Chrome 3?
Yeah, 48.
48. Right, I believe that's what I had on
Okay. Well, I'm not sure what you said on the up there. I was reading and I wasn't watching what you had on the screen. Well, I was listening to you.
It's on slide 10, I think.
Thank you. 48 responses?
Yeah, leaving CR3 in the soil is removing it by far the favorite.
Right, that's what that says, remove chrome-3 from the soil, 48 responses.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, all right.
Yeah, not leaving.
Apologies.
Take it out.
Okay. Jump the gun.
Further questions?
No questions.
Either.
Okay, there we go. I have a handful of cards. Are there any other cards? Before I begin, I just want to say that for those of you board members, I am the Director of Public Participation. I work at the State Water Board. I serve the regional boards and state board in my capacity. I've worked with the community for a couple of years now. I support your executive officer, assistant executive officer, in assisting when the request came out to assist the community. That's my job. So the community is familiar with me. I've been working closely with the Community Advisory Committee over the last few months, helping them get reestablished and understanding how to operate. So we've had many meetings over the last few months. I've worked on all of our community meetings. The community knows me. I try to be fair. I try to make sure that everyone is heard and that people are responsive. When the community has questions, we make sure that we find an answer for them. There are some that are very tough, especially those that are not the purview of the regional board, such as health issues, and we're hoping to find some agencies that can assist the community in those issues. So with that, I have the first first speaker, Ian Webster.
Got a latent number. Good evening, once again. Thank you for your attention. My name is Ian Webster. I'm the IRP manager for the Hinckley Community Advisory Committee. The CAC and myself submitted opinions on the EIR back in November. I want to thank Anne Holden for her brief summary of the comments that have been submitted then. Since then. I wanted to highlight two or three comments, though, that I think the CAC still believes are extremely important and can be considered by you as you further evaluate and make decisions going ahead. The generation of secondary chemicals, manganese, arsenic and iron, they obviously are an environmental impact of the in-situ remediation process. What I would like to bring to your attention is that since then, kind of catalyzed by the observations of black water to the west of this IRZ area, a tremendous amount of effort has been put into place involving the CAC, PG&E, the community, etc., to try and understand this particular scenario, what is going on there. So even beyond the words that are written in the EIR, there's a tremendous amount of information currently being gathered on the secondary chemical generation that hopefully through the process the appropriate information will find their way into the EIR eventually. And these remarks can supersede or update the remarks that I wrote back in November regarding secondary chemicals. The second remark is more of a philosophical one, and I pondered a lot on this myself, is the relative phasing of the background study and the EIR. It's kind of a chicken and egg type situation. The environmental impact report, without picking up a really preferred remedy, has still got to some way recognize a remedy that will meet the ultimate cleanup goal that is set, that is derived also through the background study. What I think the solution is, and I'm kind of maybe reiterating what I said a couple of months ago, is that there is a pathway through this maze under the guise of overall progress that I think is important to recognize. And that is, if an EIR is crafted, such as it is right now, that it's flexible, when now, and the board adopts the EIR on the schedule that was outlined by Ms. Holden, I think even though the background study will take some time to get done, if the EIR is flexible enough, it can mold and match up with the results of the background study when they do come in. Again, in terms of to update the board somewhat, a tremendous amount of efforts about to start on the background study work, but it does go hand in hand with the eventual EIR decision making. So from a reporting to you in conclusion as the kind of IRP manager overlooking the bits and pieces of this project that hopefully can move along on the appropriate time frames so that an eventual solution can come to the table quicker rather than later, I think the EIR now, flexible, get the background study going, and then adapt the EIR in the end to match the ultimate results of the background study. So thank you for your attention, and happy to hear any questions.
Questions for board members?
Yes, I would just ask, I understand what you're saying about the background study, but would you agree that the technologies and the potential impacts from the technologies that will be implemented in order to do the cleanup won't change necessarily depending on what that background number is? The technologies essentially be the same.
That's right. The toolbox of technologies has been kind of assembled, correct.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Next speaker, Darren Banks.
Good evening, Chair, Board. Thank you. My name is Darren Banks. I am a member of the Community Advisory Committee, and I am here to let you know, let this board know that PG&E's Whole House Water Replacement Program has changed significantly over what was presented to you last spring, and that this program is no longer considered beneficial by the Hinckley residents. To catch you up on the matter, a year ago, October, your then executive officer, Harold Singer, signed a cleanup and abatement order requiring the PG&E provide permanent and continuous replacement water supply, bless you, over the entire house to all residents with chromium and domestic wells above the maximum background levels, and to all residents with chromium in domestic wells below the maximum background levels if a statistical test indicated PG&E's waste chromium was in the domestic well. PG&E hated the last part, essentially the 3A order. Of the order and petitioned it stated no statistical test existed. Yet your staff claimed to have a statistical test that would satisfy the cleanup and abatement order requirements. 6 months after its petition, PG&E proposed what it called voluntary whole house water program that would offer permanent replacement water supply to all Hinckley residents near the plume of pollution if there was chromium 6 in their domestic wells. The voluntary program was offered so that the determination of waste chromium never had to be evaluated by PG&E, hence the 3A order. Your executive officer signed an amended cleanup and abatement order in June of this year, including a lot of suggested language by PG&E, accepted the voluntary program in lieu of the October 2011 order. I understand that the reasoning was that the voluntary program would include more residents than with the October order. The new order didn't sit well with many of the residents, however. People were willing to see how the situation played out. While the voluntary program sounded good on paper, PG&E's the beginning of it has been anything but good. First off, PG&E sent letters to residents asking them to select when the whole house water supply or you either choose whole house water or property buyout. So essentially PG&E was able to use this program to hold it over the head, saying that if you choose buyout, then we're not even going to entertain purchasing your home at any time. And those words are stated, we will not purchase your home if you choose the whole house replacement. Understanding there's a cost to this, but when, because of in some part, the orders of this board and staff, the community has been put in a position to where a bargaining chip is gone. I mean, if we don't have the ability to, if we don't agree with what PG&E is offering us, and we still want to have an option, because our home values are worth nothing. Somebody from outside isn't going to come in and want to come to a Hinkley. You know, they're not. And so, like me, for instance, I would love to have whole house replacement, because I don't know when PG&E is going to get around to negotiating my house. I mean, it's already been the first time that they came into my house, it's been 2 years since their attorneys and representatives sat in my living room and negotiated. And in the meantime, I don't believe that your order stated anything that they gave them an option to say. You know, your order was very clear. The Tier 1 people were taken care of by October 15th. The rest of us by, I believe, October 31st. Okay. Some of the people were wanted to choose the deeper well, as Billy explained earlier. That option is completely off the table, but they have yet given it to us or to you guys in writing, stating that it's off the table. But they will tell you that it is off the table. And people have asked for it, and they PG&E refuses. They will not do it. Well, PG&E drilled a couple aquifer wells in the southwestern area of Hinkley and claims to have found trace elements of chromium in one sample, but won't share those results with the residents. Then this fall, PG&E informed the residents that it was canceling the deep aquifer well option. The reason this made no sense, because based upon the most recent PG&E groundwater monitoring report, there are 6 domestic wells close to the deep aquifer wells all showing non-detect levels of chromium. When it was asked why PG&E didn't just install their deep well at the same depth as those 6 domestic wells, PG&E had no response but refused to change their decision on canceling the deep aquifer well for all those who requested it. It was also pointed out that chromium detection, if it really did exist, was miles away from other residents' properties where the owner requested the deep well. In the end, no resident in Hinkley, as I said, was shown the chromium detection that PG&E claims to exist in the deeper wells. No resident got the deep wells, as I stated, according to the voluntary program and cleanup and abatement order. Now going to the issue of the ion exchange unit, if a resident agreed to, at the onset, to go with the water filter system, they were required to sign PG&E's contract agreeing to never request the property purchase in the future without even knowing what would happen in the future, including the final cleanup options being considered in your staff's EIR. Well, many people refused to sign this contract, usually on the advice from attorneys, and then were booted out of the voluntary program by PG&E. For those residents who signed the contract, the nightmare was only beginning. For example, people didn't have hard water and told PG&E that they didn't want the reverse osmosis system that came with the outdoor ion exchange filter system. At issue was that some people didn't want the constant invasion of privacy in their homes by PG&E contractors, or to have to leave work early all the time to accommodate the contractor's schedule to work indoors. One person told me that it takes 1.5 hours to collect water samples from the RO system, which is done each month. Yet PG&E refused to budge and insisted that the filter system included the reverse osmosis system no matter what, or the resident would get no system. This makes no sense, especially if the intent of the water board's order was to have the chromium removed, which could be done with just the outdoor ion exchange filter. Some people were willing to give the contractor a key for the gate on their property, but not a key to their home. In the end, some people, not wanting PG&E's contractor inside their homes, opted out of the program. Another example is it wasn't until after the filter system was brought to the site and installed, people were informed that PG&E would be contacting the county building inspector for approval. This shocked some people who had made minor improvements to their property in the past and knew to fear our local building inspector, who has a reputation of calling all unpermitted features on the property. Even something as simple as a new window, and then writing up the owner of the property. Even when some residents told PG&E that they would take responsibility for contacting the building inspector themselves and getting the filter system permitted, PG&E refused and insisted that it would contact the county. The issue caused many more people to opt out of the voluntary program. Finally, even if a resident signed PG&E's original contract and property access form and jumped through all the hoops put in place by PG&E, PG&E's lawyers just had to stick it to the residents one more time by insisting that they sign a revised agreement promising to wait to sell the property for at least 5 years, or PG&E would not turn on the filter. You think I'm making this up? This instance happened to Mr. McHenry Cook on Mountain View Road, who I got permission to speak about. Now, if you don't know Mr. Cook, he's an elderly gentleman who was part of one of the three large mediated settlements with PG&E years ago. Mr. Cook has no idea what his advanced health will be like in a year, let alone 5 years from now. So they refused to sign the revised agreement, which caused a lot of stress, because he wasn't he hasn't signed. The filter system on his property was hooked up to power and is not being turned on. He is one of many that have the same issue. I have been told that I will be refused the whole house replacement, and I intend to sell my house when PG&E begins to realistically negotiate with my attorneys. So as I said at the beginning of my talk, voluntary program has little resemblance to the voluntary program it sold to your management half a year ago. While the purpose of the voluntary program was to get whole house replacement, water supply to as many people as possible, remaining in Hinckley, that is not as what happened. As of today, only a few residents have the filter system at their houses. I have heard that so many people have opted out of the program due to unreasonable and illogical hoops that PG&E has put in the way. I wouldn't be surprised if only one-third of those well owners eligible will actually end up getting a filter system by the board's deadline in August. Not to mention all of the other people who chose the deep well option and now won't get it. And who does benefit? I'm sure you can guess. PG&E Corporate, of course, from all the cost savings to put in deep wells or filter systems. Who also benefits? PG&E staff will benefit from getting significant year-end bonuses. The residents believe, however, the PG&E program can be saved if all of the following are done. Either put in the deeper wells or provide another water supply option, such as the tanks. make the reverse osmosis system optional for residents who do not have hard water, remove language and access agreements insisting that the owners must stay in their property for 5 years and can never return to PG&E to request property purchase and conditions and if conditions change in the future. The Water Board's orders have no business in personal business with PG&E, which is how they backdoored around your guys' orders. Allow property owners to the option to pursue a permit for the filter system on their own to the county building department. If PG&E is unwilling to include all of these items so that a majority of the residents can participate in the voluntary program, then I am requesting that this board direct your executive officer to, as soon as possible, void the current cleanup and abatement order allowing for PG&E's voluntary program, and instead reenact the October 2011 cleanup and abatement order that had more requirements upon PG&E for the whole house permanent water supply, including Section 3. That's all I have for the whole house replacement. I just wanted to add a couple things. The cleanup and abatement order that was issued in August of 2008, since then there have been a couple additions to that, one of which was Amendment 2008-0002A1 establishes background levels for chromium 6 and total chromium in groundwater for the purpose of final cleanup actions. In this, from their background study, from which we have since learned is flawed, the executive officer of the Water Board, I understand, you do not want to change the background until a new study is done. I understand that. But in the work study, the PG&E stated that the reason, their most important reason, and as I read it, was that they had their ability to not work with the lower levels because the maximum background was set to 3.1 according to their flawed background study. The minimum background, or the maximum total chrome was 3.2. The average background for chromium 6 was 1.2. Okay, that's average. And the average for total chrome was 1.5. They stated that the technology or their ability to work with those lower numbers, they didn't have it. I have had many meetings with PG&E and my other CAC members are Dr. Webster and many others can state that they will tell you that they can clean it up down to zero. Non-detect, no more chromium. Okay, so I would ask that the Water Board revisit that order and change your order to include the plume to 1.2, which is where it should have been in the first place, because that's the average across the board. You know, one wants to take the average, not the top. You know, that really makes no sense. Finally, we have a petition that was signed by the Community Advisory Committee and some of the Hinckley residents. We weren't able to get it out to everybody, but essentially this petition asks that the Water Board revisit the order, order PG&E to continue to test the wells of the properties that they purchase. You want to talk about the holes, and that's part of the problem with the holes. They test them a couple times, and if they meets their criteria or what they think, then they no longer test those. Some of the wells they've already destroyed, as I understand it. That may or may not be true. If that's true, have them put a monitoring well next to where the old well was. I think that it's important to continue keeping. That would bridge the gaps of some of the holes in the plume. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. Shel Bilbrey wanted to respond.
Thank Good evening again. My name is Cheryl Bilbrey. I'm the director for the Chromium team, excuse me, with PG&E. So there are a few things I just wanted to clarify from Mr. Bank's statements. The first on the deeper wells, going back to when PG&E proposed our voluntary program, we have now over 300 residents that are eligible for the program. About 70% of those residents have elected property purchase. So most folks so far are wanting that option. There's about 15% that want a whole house water system, and another 15% that are essentially opting out of our program. When we had originally proposed a water solution, we looked at both the ion exchange RO units as well as deeper wells. And we spoke with the staff at the Water Board extensively about this because we didn't want to install a deeper well if the water quality didn't meet the requirements. So once we got some additional data that showed that the deeper wells would not meet the requirements of the order, we decided not to continue with that option because it wouldn't meet the requirements. So the only option we had available to us is the whole house water drinking treatment units, which we have installed on 2 residents, and we're in the process of installing on 9 more. What Mr. Banks said about the RO units and the intrusive nature of sampling those is absolutely true. We understand it's difficult for people to have us in their home. I wouldn't want that either. So we did propose a letter to Patty recently requesting a change in the monitoring program so we can not be as intrusive. But I just want to point out that the RO units themselves are a requirement of the order. So we cannot just give ion exchange units. If somebody doesn't want the RO unit, the order would have to be amended. And then the other thing I just want to mention on the access agreements. So what Mr. Banks was referring to is PG&E does need an agreement with the resident to be able to go on their property and get access. That's the only thing that's included in that agreement, is allowing us that access. And so, when we ask people to make a decision one way or the other on whether they wanted property or whole house water, the reason we had to do that is because the reason we had to ask people to make a choice is because we have a deadline in the order. We want to make sure we comply with that deadline. So getting an access agreement in place then allows us to move forward and get the systems installed in the time frame that we're allotted. Otherwise, there'd be significant delays to that. So we're not adding any additional requirements. We're just trying to get access to people's property. And the last thing I want to say is on the permits and sort of the inspection, having the code violation issue. We understand that's an issue, and we have been trying to work with folks because we certainly don't want, if people don't want inspectors on their properties, we don't want to bring that on, but we also have to get the systems permitted. It's a requirement. So we're trying to balance that. Thank you.
What about, Cheryl, that last issue about requiring people not to sell the property for 5 years?
Yeah, I don't know. That's not a requirement that I'm aware of. The only reason we revised the access agreement from the original, Mr. Banks is correct, we had an original version. We did get some comments from the Water Board staff or some suggestions on making it clearer. So we did incorporate the suggestions from the board staff. And so that's why there's a second version. But it doesn't change. The intent is essentially the same. It's just to get access to the property.
Just a couple more questions. Why are the RO units required by the order?
Because the order says we have to meet all federal and state MCLs, drinking water standards, and the ion exchange systems are only intended to remove the chromium. They don't remove TDS and other things that would be required by the RO units. So we have to have both in order to meet the requirements.
So the RO units are used to meet arsenic and TDS, et cetera?
Well, actually, all the metals are removed by the ion exchange system, but there are other constituents that are removed by the RO, like TDS. So we do have to have both. Because if people didn't want the RO, we would be fine with not installing it. you know, we're trying to do what folks want, but we have to comply.
So when you were mentioning that requirements are not being met with the deeper well, what constituents were you finding with the deeper well?
Well, we did find chromium at low levels, but again, it's above 0.06, which is the requirement, and also arsenic. There is arsenic in the deeper aquifer. So we didn't want to be drilling a well that then had arsenic in it versus chrome 6. So we didn't think that would be a good option for people.
And just one last question. Why are people who are opting for the buyout not being offered the whole house replacement water systems?
Well, what we've asked people to do is make a choice, excuse me, because we can't pursue both. For us to order a whole house water system, we actually have to pay for it ahead of time, so we can't do both. So we ask people to make a choice.
What are the costs of those systems?
Well, excuse me. The unit costs are substantial. We're still working on the exact number, but it's actually more expensive for us to put in a whole house water system. We would have preferred the deeper well option. It was cheaper. It was easier for residents. It was definitely our preference. It just didn't work out.
Are those that are that have opted for the buyout, are they being provided bottled water?
That's correct. We will continue to do bottled water until either they've left or they have their system operational.
Any further questions? Mr. Banks, this is for the record.
I don't have another copy, but I would be glad to make a copy of that. And I know that they have copies of other...
What does the first line say that you crossed out?
We've given you guys copies of that before, but we'd be happy to give you the access agreements.
This line here?
We just can't accept changes. We can't accept handwritten changes on the access agreements. They have to be clean copies for us.
Like
dying.
That's the line that states that your home will not be purchased if you choose.
So are you saying that this right here, Darren, I'm sorry, where it says this agreement will remain in effect for 5 years, is that what you're saying where it says that they can't sell? Or is the non-selling...
It doesn't say that anywhere.
It says 100% that PG&E... It does not say it can't sell. Buy me a realtor and find me somebody that'll buy my home.
Oh, I know, but I thought you said that there was a requirement
say
that they
I'm responding to her comment.
It doesn't say that
anywhere.
I
understand that. It says that PG&E will not purchase the home.
No, what we're asking for people to make a choice between property purchase and whole house water.
Okay, hang on just a moment. If we could have a copy of that, much appreciated.
Absolutely.
And
send you one.
We could have an unwritten... Yeah.
We'll send you the PDF version.
Yeah.
Peggy.
I have several questions down here.
For me or?
Okay. For you.
Did you say that the ion exchange system left contaminants in the drinking water that exceeded maximum contaminant levels?
No, there's naturally occurring constituents in the water already. So the ion exchange unit itself removes all the metals in the water that are naturally occurring, and it also removes the chromium. The RO units are sort of a polishing step. They'll take out the salts and other things that are in the water.
So then the salts that would be left by the ion exchange system exceed MCL?
Some of them do, yes. And so the requirement was to make sure that when it comes out of the tap, it meets every MCL or standard that's out there.
Okay, thank you.
Are there questions for board members?
I'd just like to add something. When we had done the whole house replacement order, that was there was 2 weeks on the job when I did that one with Harold's help, but I think we had some ideas how it would help the community, but I think a lot of things have changed, and we've heard some issues here about the workability of that order. So I know we've had some good discussions where we had the community, PG in the room, and us to talk about these things. I know we've talked about code enforcement and the problems with that. So, you know, I would be open to sitting down with all of us in the room and having a discussion about that order and what works and what doesn't work and see if what we can do with that.
I would like to respond to
first of all, many people would have taken the ion exchange unit, many, including myself, if initially if they weren't frightened to death that they were going to be stuck in a place that they're scared for their families, scared for their children, and they had no other option other than PG&E to purchase their home. So PG&E leveraged your order becoming a voluntary order, and regardless of what she says, the amount of people that would have requested that would be exponentially larger. And including myself, I initially had signed up to it. My mother-in-law, who lives behind me, signed up to it and went all the way through it. And I had it, and it got all the way down to where they were supposed to come do all the testing. And my wife was absolutely frightened to death because of, you know, she's grown up here, and because of all the medical and all the other issues, she didn't want to have to deal with any issues when it came time to the purchase of our home. So I said, okay, I understand. We want clean water for my son, and I don't want any of us exposed to any of the byproducts from or any of the waste from PG&E. So if it's going to take them years and years and years to come to their determination, then they need to provide the people. And the water board's order isn't an appropriate place to leverage our property. And that's exactly what's been done.
Mr. Banks, thank you for your input, and we take it very seriously.
I didn't give you that survey.
Thank you. Okay. Next speaker card, Lester White.
Hi, I'm Lester White, CEC Chairman. I wanted to elaborate a little bit on the in situ. The board that I sit on, we're not asking specifically to shut the in situ completely down. We're just asking that the board would consider that they would stop the ethanol for a short amount of time until we have the USGS come in and help us determine what the black water is and how much of it there is and where it's going. We have no idea where it's going, and none of that has been established yet. So we need a little time to be able to do that. I mean, we're all for going forward on this project, but not going forward so fast that we overlook these important issues. And also, we would like to use the USGS and the Lahontan Water Board to further study this black water. And I believe that these tanks or a permanent water a supply system would be great. The Mojave Water Agency actually has a pipeline that goes through Hinckley. I think I've mentioned this to you before. And we've got permission from the Mojave Water Agency to tap into that line as long as there is a second source. And Harold brought that up. There has to be a second water source. And that would mean, and Mojave Water Agency also gave, Kirby Brill gave us permission to actually draw water from wells around their dumping stations for a second water source. And so this pipeline is pressurized that goes through Hinckley, and we do have clean water there. We just need a treatment system to be attached to it. And the tanks would be a good as a short-term solution on each home, especially the homes specifically with black water. We need those families dealt with right away. We can't wait any longer on that issue. PG&E has went and purchased a home or a property that had black water and got that family out, and we do appreciate that. And also, I wanted to elaborate a little bit. When Harold Singer was the executive officer, you guys had signed an order letting PG&E exceed their plume boundaries on Thompson Road. And since then, my family had got a one-point spike since you guys approved that. And since they got that one-point spike, I've lost two uncles and my mother. They've all died with cancer. And a couple of weeks ago, a couple of months ago, my family has been negotiating, or maybe it's been a little longer, maybe 4 months, they've been negotiating for a buyout because they need to get off that property, and they understand this. But PG&E has been dragging their feet on purchasing their property from them. And since PG&E has been dragging their feet on that, last week I've been informed that another uncle has been diagnosed with leukemia. We've had enough of this shit. We've had enough. You guys need to stand up and do something else to help us. I did all I can do. I come up here, I don't even have a job anymore. I sit here and I'm volunteering all my time to do this. And if you guys can't do this, then who else is going to do it for us? Who's going to help us? We get up here, your decisions do affect people's lives. You may not see it, but I do. I've taken it upon myself to get a Bible and go around and read these people's their last rites that have cancer. I don't know if you've ever seen a person die with brain cancer before, but it's pretty damn hideous. Okay? My cousin died that way, and she's at the northern part of the plume. She's no longer with us, but she died. And she left behind two small 6-month-old and a 2-year-old. Okay? And her father has them now, and now they're in the plume. Well, to the northern end of the plume. Okay? And he wants out, but he's out of the mild buffer zone. So the plume delineation needs to be done. We need these people to be taken care of, especially to the north and to the west and to the east. This problem is going on, and we're going to work as hard as we can on that structure. Okay, our absolute hardest, and that's all I have.
Thank you, Lester.
Thank you. Next speaker is James Dodd.
I'm a resident of Hinckley, former CAC committee. And I keep hearing about the arsenic and manganese. I had my well tested, paid for it myself. I'm 5 miles away, and my arsenic's over the level that the state recommends. My problem is there is a test to take that arsenic and define if it's organic or inorganic. I don't know why PG&E's not doing it. If the levels are that high, 80, 100, I've seen it on the website, they can test it. And I was told today they can also do manganese. So why aren't they testing it for organic or inorganic to find out where it's coming from? That's one thing. The water treatment system. Okay, I signed up for it. And I brought up about the reverse osmosis units being put in my house. Well, I had custom cabinets made in the kitchen. I didn't want this thing in there in case it leaked. And I said, can you put it on the water treatment thing before it comes to the house? No, we can't do that. And I asked for a couple other little things. It says whole house. I said, what about my jacuzzi? Nope. Water my horses? Nope. Little pool for my granddaughter in summer? Nope. I said, okay, well, the water that I've been using with chrome, okay, I have little detection in my well. Basal cell carcinoma is what causes from chrome in your water if you're swimming. And I've been in people's pools. They were bought out. They use their well water. I've had two cut off me already. This is a serious issue. I'm glad to see everybody stepping up. But and there needs to be more done. If they can put in two ponds for their plant over there and get the EIR done and get these two ponds done, and it's been 60 years, why can't we get this water cleaned up? That's all I got to say. I just need to see something being done. And there can be a test on the arsenic and manganese.
Thank you, Mr. Dodd. Billy Hernandez.
Hello, I'd like to address you again. I agree with Darren that the background study, they keep going by the 3.1, and it should be lower. It should be like the 1.2 or 1.2 average. You know, that's one of the things. With what they're doing right now on this EIR draft that they're doing, you know, where they're going to be extending the plume, that means a lot more people are going to be in the scope of getting the whole house water system. I disagree with Cheryl when she stands up here and says we don't have any other options. You know, tomorrow, I have to meet with PG&E, and they're going to offer me something for my house. One of the things that I asked was, I already have a deeper well, so that's not an option for me. So I don't want the filtration system. So where does that leave me? A buyout? I've spent a lot of money in Hinckley in the last 5 years. I've been asked numerous times, why'd you come to Hinckley? Well, in the last 6 months, I've lost one of my neighbors to the north that I've known for more than 20 years. In December, I lost my other neighbor that I've known for more than 30 years. Okay, I bought this property 15 years ago, and my plan was to retire in Hinckley. You know, I'm 10 minutes from work, no traffic, you know. I don't want to be in Bear Valley Road or something where I'm dealing with all this traffic and congestion, you know. I have a nice, easy commute to work. And I have spent a great deal of money in this community trying to, you know, my friends kept telling me, just come out, just put up a mobile home or something. I built a 4,700 square foot home, and I got 7,200 square foot of buildings. I got 24 up, and I got one that's pending. You know, 4,800 that I got the county and everybody to give me an extension to see what's going to play out here. I wasn't planning on just taking the buyout. A lot of people weren't planning on taking the buyout. But like I said, when she stands up here and says these were the options, no, I said it. 18 months ago, the community said, give us a water line. Give us a treatment center that would give us, you know, water to every person there. And they kept telling the people, because they're the ones who decided. They're the ones who decided, no, we're going to give you a deeper well, a filtration system, or a buyout. We want an answer from you by October 15th. And this program ends December 2012 of this last year. So I don't even know what's in place right now. But you're extending the plume line to the north right now, and it's going to put some other people, I don't know what's available to them. Now, Tom, one of the high guys of PG&E, came to the CAP member about four months ago, and he's kind of put down the gauntlet and said, why don't you guys tell us what you want? And I said, I'll tell you what, I thought about that. And I thought, you know what, if you were to put in a water system, a looped water system, because there's some kind of a Mojave water line on Community Boulevard that we could tie into. And they could put in a water loop system, and then I have people here in Barstow that have property out here, and they're in limbo. They can't do anything because they don't have a well or they don't have a resident. So PG&E has not even talked to them. And I have brought it up many times where, well, why don't you let those people, why don't you buy their property so at least they can take their money and go spend it somewhere else? Because right now they're in limbo. PG&E won't listen to that. So I keep pushing this idea of, you know, let's put water lines in. And that they won't even go there. Because their first assessment of doing that was with the size of the plume right near to the compressor station. And there was only about 16 houses involved. You know? So that's not feasible. So that's why they've kind of gone with the filtration system or a deeper well. But as you've heard, the deeper well is not working and they haven't offered anything else. My friends that had left told me that if they would have had clean water, they would have stayed. That's, you know, they built their houses just like me to retire here. And I told Tom, you know, and PG&E several times that if you were to put in a water system and you pipe the lines, you could even take people that were in affected areas that were real bad and you could relocate them. Put them on because they own so much property right there that what I was suggesting was from Linwood Road to Hinckley Road in that whole section. If they were to put houses in there, they could have relocated people and kind of rebooted our community. You know, by having this kind of a system. I said, you know, it's right near the community center, by the senior center. And I said, you know, what I've heard and what I've been talking about is if there's so much property that if you put houses on the outside of these lots and you were to put like a golf course down the middle. And the reason I suggested a golf course is because when I was talking to people at golf courses, they say that it uses a volume of water like a million gallons a day. And this would help that process of treating the water. And I keep thinking, you know, Barstow doesn't really have a golf course anymore. It only has the little one at the Marine base. These are all things that I thought could reboot our community. Get everybody that has property, you know, get everybody decoupled from the plume. And, you know, they won't even go there. But when she stands up here and tells us that there's no other options, you know, why do I have to say, like I said, I spent over $500,000 on my place, you know. I could have went and lived anywhere else. I chose to be here near friends that I've been to their weddings, I've been to their kids' baptisms, I've been to their parents' funerals. You know, we go on vacations together. Now they're gone. I have one friend that's waiting to see what I'm going to do, whether we're going to go live near each other again. You know, and it's a crying shame. I don't want to leave. But as you heard, the filtration system is your only option. That or a buyout. You know, why have I spent so much money to be in this community and then the people that are responsible for the damage won't even consider even like a 10,000 gallon tank with water, you know, for the people that want to stay? That should be an option since they took the other one off. And in addition to that, we have a unique opportunity coming up. Let me tell you something. I've been trying to put myself into this. I run my own business. It takes so much time. I spent from 3:30 in the afternoon yesterday till 9 o'clock dealing with PG&E and all this stuff yesterday. This morning I spent from 9:30 this morning to 12:30. When I signed up for this, I thought I was signing up for maybe one meeting a week. And it's been like 12 a month or 13 a month, and I just have to keep doing things. But it's important. And we have a unique opportunity that I've mentioned to PG&E, and they won't even go there. On the 23rd of this month, at the Hinckley School, we have a meeting with Caltrans. Okay? Caltrans is proposing four different options to bring the freeway through. That's another unique opportunity to put the pipe lights in, even bring in natural gas, another option to reboot our community. I don't see why they can spend so many millions and millions of dollars putting in monitoring wells here, monitoring wells there. We're going to do new ponds. We got money for that. You know how many people they pay to go from Northern California to Southern California to here to there to toxologists, you know, to all kinds of people that are professionals. They got all this money. But what they should have done 25 or 30 years ago when this first thing blew up was put in a water system. And they would have decoupled everybody. You know, so we ask you, and I've been trying for the last 6 months on this committee, to push forward and make this community grow again. And that's what I'm hoping that you guys we'll look at this whole house water and say, you know what? They dropped the ball. And they're not picking it up. I don't even know what's in place right now because, like I said, people were supposed to make a decision by October 15th. Which one do you want? And I asked. I said, I don't really want a filtration system, so what does that leave me? I already have a deeper well. And so that's where I'm at.
Well, thank you for your input. I know Patty's going to be looking into it. She's already made that offer.
Okay.
I'm not going to put words in her mouth.
All right, thank you.
It is time for us to look at this again. You know, much has changed, so I do make a commitment for us to get together and see if we can figure out a path forward.
Can you see it? Can you understand? Like, see, tomorrow I have a deadline. You know, my deadline is to go sit down with them and say, you know, buy out my only option. I've waited 2 years. You know, I built a room that was 36 by 40 to do an indoor pool. And I've never done that yet because I've been waiting. You know, what's going to happen with the water here? I've been patient. But I don't think it's fair for me to stand up here and, you know, this is my only option. Because I don't want, I spent more than $15,000 on my granite. I don't want them drilling through it and putting this ugly faucet in there. That's not, that wasn't the picture of my dream home. And I don't want people coming in either.
Rich, I thank you very much for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Billy. I don't have any more cards. Are there any more public comments? Did you want to say something, Lester?
Lester?
I'm Lester White, chairman of CAC. I absolutely, wholeheartedly agree with everything that Billy just said about the water pipeline. And like I said before, that I did speak with the Mojave Water Agency about this, and they're very forthcoming about allowing this to happen. We just got to sit down and hash some of these things out with them if this was an option, you know. And I feel like if PG&E can afford to borrow $1.7 billion to purchase the Lockhart Solar Plant, they can put us in a water line. So I just want to let you guys know that.
Thank you, Lester.
Thank you. I believe that is the close of the comments. I don't see any more comments, so I want to thank you all very much for coming this evening, and I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Joining.
I do indeed thank everyone for their comments, and you guys down here living here, just a visitor passing through. But comments from other board members? We'll see what we could do.
Thank you very much. With that, the meeting is closed for tonight. I believe the board will resume tomorrow morning with other items that are on the agenda. Thank you.
We'll be here at 8:30.
Thank you.